This podcast is intended for investment professionals only.
Hello and welcome to this CIO market update from LGIM. I'm Max Julius, Head of Content, and I'm delighted to be joined by Sonia Loud, CIO, Uday Patnaik, Head of Emerging Market Debt, and Eric Luth, Global Emerging Market Economist. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the pod.
Good morning, Max.
Good morning. Good morning.
Well, after investors endured a particularly tough first half, today we're going to dig into the market outlook for the coming months. And of course, given two of our speakers today, we will devote a special focus to emerging markets. But before all of that, Sonia, let's look at the current market narrative. Just how pronounced a shift have we seen among investors from anxiety about inflation to concern about recession? And of the many other noteworthy markets and macro developments since our last call, which is at the forefront of your thinking?
Thanks, Max, and warm welcome to everyone. I'm not quite sure whether enjoyment is the right word when it comes to mind when we talk about the first half of this year, because as you quite rightly said, investors had to endure quite outsized losses. And to me, the remarkable events have been that these outsized losses are across pretty much every asset class available. In fact, it is only the commodities complex that has been able to post positive returns for the first half of this year. And the positive bond equity correlation, I think is fair to say, probably has caused the worst headache for most investors. And we're looking at double-digit losses across most of the global bond complex and including obviously equity markets. And I think this is why it is worth just taking a step back and looking at the current picture and what is emerging before, as you quite rightly point out, look at the detail whether indeed we have seen an inflection point where the inflation adjustment has been priced into global markets. Have we really seen a realistic reflection of global monetary tightening being priced in? And is it really only about growth now in the second half of this year? And it's worth highlighting that it's not just the absolute losses that we have had to endure. It's actually as bad that you have to go back to the 60s for equity markets and actually to the 80s for bond markets to find similar outsized losses in a half-year period. And clearly, this links to, obviously, the inflation shock that markets had to digest in the first half of this year. But I think it's always worth pointing out that, yes, we have looked at inflationary pressures, but you have to go back quite a long way in order to find similarities and obviously similar episodes in markets that would have produced similar negative returns as we are looking at since the beginning of the year. And now going forward, it's very clear that the question whether the recession, when it's going to happen and how bad it's going to be, is very much at the forefront of investors' mind, and quite rightly so. Just in the second quarter, we've yet seen another massive repricing of expectations around monetary tightening. And so it's fair to say that investors are now thinking maybe we at least have the majority priced in. So now let's think about how effective is the monetary tightening going to be in slowing down the economy. And I think this is where, you know, although we have to assume that most of it is priced in, there's still a question mark whether we have really have a realistic assumption and assessment already, or whether the second half still could surprise us with yet more resilience in inflationary data and hence more wobbles around, oh, maybe the Fed has to do even more than originally anticipated. But clearly growth will be the dominant driver. And it's fair that for the US, we have brought forward our assumption of a recession. But for the time being, this does not look like going to happen before 2023. So as such, the second half of 22 will be very much around judging how quickly the economy will slow down. And particular for the equity markets, it will come down to how good companies can withstand the current backdrop. And the current backdrop is clearly the geopolitical situation and the uncertainty that is still arising from there. Inflation and how good businesses can adjust to the inflationary backdrop and how good they can actually pass through some of the price pressures to the end customer. And then clearly the impact on the end consumer and how quickly this might slow down. It's fair to say that Europe will look at a very different situation compared to the US. And as we talked in previous podcast episodes, this is predominantly linked to the fact that the US is an energy exporter versus Europe, who is a big energy importer. Particularly the dependence on Russia has caused real headaches here in Europe. So again, we will see divergence in terms of the regional impact. But nevertheless, for investors, it is all about the earnings outlook and how quickly growth is going to slow down.
Thank you for that overview, Sonia, and that long-term perspective as well. Let's drill down into some of those themes now with you, Eric. How have inflation and growth dynamics been evolving across emerging markets? And what do you expect in the second half?
Okay, thanks, Max. And hello, everybody again. We do see growth slowing in emerging markets in a very gradual way, but it is slowing. But there are also big regional differences. So LATAM is holding up reasonably well, and that's because LATAM is a big commodity exporter. Then we have Asia in the middle. Asia imports a lot of energy, but it is still far away from Europe and Russia. And then we have CEMEA, particularly the peripheral European emerging markets. They are hit on several fronts. They are energy importers, manufacturing powerhouses, and they are very close to Russia. So it's a diverse picture. Inflation is rising across the board in EM as everywhere else. Asia is somewhat of an outlier. I think that's the reason for that is that it always has been somewhat of a laggard in the COVID wave. So output gaps are still negative in many Asian countries. Also, it is the factory of the world. So a lot of the goods are being produced there. It didn't have to deal with these bottlenecks in ports and in transports that other regions had to deal with. What's the outlook? We expect growth to slow further in the second half. That's on account of further tightening, slowing of the global cycle. Inflation we expect to peak around August, around 8% for the median emerging market. But there is more than the usual uncertainty around that forecast, I would say.
Okay, so rising inflation, slowing growth, and some idiosyncratic stories there under the surface across regions. Obvious follow-up questions. How much policy tightening across emerging markets is currently priced in by markets? And does this look reasonable to you?
Yeah, so at the moment, the policy rate of the median emerging market, and we in asset allocation look mostly at the top 20 emerging markets, a much smaller universe than Uday would look at. So the median interest rate there is about 6%. Markets are pricing in another 4 to 5 quarter percentage point hikes. We actually think that more might be needed. Several reasons for that. One is real interest rates by the end of the year on reasonable inflation projections would still be negative in several emerging markets, really deeply negative still. We can also see emerging current account pressures. So current accounts are widening and are becoming quite large in many emerging markets. We have now more emerging markets with large current account deficits. And that's usually a sign also of too loose policy. It weighs on the currency, which again requires tightening. We don't, as Sonia said, we don't expect the US recession this year. So the Fed will continue hiking. That again puts pressure on emerging market currencies, and they will need to continue hiking. And then even in Europe, where we might see a recession this year, this could be a risk of event. And it's not clear that, again, this could really weigh on peripheral currencies and require further hikes. So in general, we think that even more than is at the moment priced might be needed.
Thank you. Very interesting. Let's return to the question of currencies later in the call. This is a great point to bring Woody into the conversation. Woody, it's fair to say that like other fixed income assets, emerging market debt has had a tough first half. In light of the backdrop that Eric has just outlined, what's the outlook from here?
Yeah. Hi, everybody. Yeah, I would say to put sort of the first 6 months of this year in perspective, the adjectives could be historical, epic, et cetera. And in fact, it's the worst, most challenging 6 month period from a return perspective since 1994 for sovereign hard currency debt. For hard currency corporates debt, this is the worst start historically since data has been compiled for the asset class. So for the first half of this year, for example, hard currency sovereign debt was down just over 20%, right? And this is predominantly dollar denominated debt. Corporate hard currency debt was down about 14%. The outlook, interestingly, it's really, in my opinion, much more dependent sort of on the U.S. inflation expectation outlook. Okay. So the sell-off we've had is obviously based on, you know, the Fed's rapid moves and the expectations of rapid moves. And I think this has led to the historical outflows that we've seen, the largest outflows in the history of EM for the first 6 months of a year, over $50 billion. So for those outflows to stop, I believe that investors have to believe that inflation expectations for the second half of this year will need to subside.
Thanks for that, Woody. All eyes on the Fed and US inflation expectations. Another clear follow-up question for you, which is, where does the team see the greatest opportunities and risks within EMD?
Well, I suppose, you know, the silver lining when you have such a literally historical once-in-a-lifetime type of sell-off in EM fixed income is that there is tremendous value, really by mostly any measure, across the rating spectrum. So in my opinion, from investment grade sovereigns all the way to double B, single B, and even select distressed names. So for example, in investment grade sovereigns in Latin America, a region that we generally do like, as Eric mentioned, we prefer, for example, Mexico at current valuations. In the single B, we do like, for example, certain credits in the Sub-Sahara Africa region. But even if, you know, if you're looking at sectors, for example, the Indian renewable energy sector has repriced significantly due to these outflows. Not that the companies are performing poorly. In fact, they're actually performing better. So there are tremendous opportunities today, in my opinion, to be looking at emerging market with a 12-month type of view.
Thanks, Woody. And the risks?
The risks predominantly emanate around the, number one, the inflation call. For example, that if inflation expectations aren't anchored, or the market believes that, let's say, the Fed is perhaps behind the curve, this could lead to more outflows, right? And it's really the outflows that we've seen that have exacerbated the move over the last 6 weeks, okay? So the inflation expectations are key. Obviously, one of the things that is very important is the view that the second half of this year, China growth improves after a very tumultuous first half due to COVID. Whilst we do have COVID issues in China, of course, ongoing, that the base case is that China growth the second half does improve meaningfully from a very low bar in the first half. But if we are proven to be wrong, that would be clearly an issue, not for just emerging markets, but for the global economy.
Well, that's very clear. Thank you, Woody. Sonia, you touched on this earlier, regards to equities. Equity market volatility has come down a bit in recent days and weeks. Looking ahead, how do you expect risk assets in general to trade over the coming months? Should investors prepare for another hot summer?
It's a very good question, and I'm not sure that volatility really has calmed down for good only because of a few days. And it's very clear that everyone's now looking towards the second quarter earnings season and what we will learn from companies' outlook. What I find very interesting is how equity markets have reacted to the initial kind of first half repricing of monetary tightening expectations. And although what I said earlier is very much, it has been risk off and equity markets are down by easy over 20%. it doesn't really tell you what's been happening within indices and how much sector rotation we've actually seen. And that is important because if you look what happened very, very recently, it might give you an indication how investors are starting to think about this potential handover from inflationary risks to potential growth fears and how you position accordingly. So for the first half of this year, we've had a massive rotation into energy, i.e. everything that is commodity related, obviously had a good first half. And you have seen the opposite. The flip side was everything related to cyclicals, the technology sector, consumer discretionary, obviously have been at the other end of the spectrum. Now, from mid-June, where we have seen quite a lot of shift within global bond markets, treasuries in particular, I think saw 75 basis point retracement on the back of this understanding, okay, we have now priced in the monetary tightening, now let's start worrying about the economic outlook. And you saw this flight to safety with regards to global bonds. And obviously this has been reflected in equity markets as well. So from mid-June, you have actually seen energy being the worst sector. And you've seen some of the other sectors that have suffered in the first half coming back. Now, I would be very cautious that this might be too early, very much alongside what I said earlier, because we don't know yet how quickly, point one, the economy will slow, and point two, how good and resilient businesses have been in dealing with a very different inflationary backdrop, how successful they have been to protect their own margin and pass through some of the price increases, and how much they have been impacted by the potential shift in consumer demands, given that consumers are faced with a cost of living crisis. There will be very different outcomes potentially across regions, across sectors and individual companies. And hence, to position just based on this inflation versus growth debate might be quite risky for the second half. Now, as I've said a couple of times in the past, normally what you would expect in this final phase of the cycle is equities actually to do well, because it is still a phase that is supported by very positive economic growth. Yes, the Fed has started to hike, but it's clearly done in the expectation that there is this remaining window of opportunity where equities can do well. Now, all of this has been superseded this year because of the enormous amount of uncertainty from the geopolitical situation, the cost of living crisis, the energy crisis, and hence, obviously, a much compressed final part of the cycle that has led to this massive risk off. If you look at valuation levels, then clearly you will find pockets. And what I'm saying now applies equally to some of the credit markets than it does to the equity markets, because valuation and readjustment processes obviously have come a long way. And you might find pockets where there's already opportunity arising. But this is why I've stressed so much that there will be very different outcomes depending on the level of resiliency that we might find in different parts of the corporate sector.
Okay, so apparent pockets of value amid an outlook that remains shrouded in uncertainty with more volatility, a distinct...
And I think, you know, Woody have given us a few already, right? I mean, I think the way he described it shows you directly how we think about you, how you identify where obviously the adjustment process has now gone far enough and where you actually find value emerging. But it is clear that it's not outsized beta positions anymore. It is very clearly a focus on distinct structural themes that we can identify and hence feel comfortable in taking those positions.
Right. And of course, a key factor for investors right now is the tragic conflict in Ukraine. Sonia, you've already mentioned some of its macro implications. Woody, can you give us a brief update as to the state of the bond markets for those countries directly affected?
Yeah, it's a very interesting question, Max. It's there are multiple implications, and in fact, for countries that are perhaps not even let's say close by. So, for example, clearly food security is an issue globally, but for the most vulnerable countries, it has a more outsized impact. And you don't necessarily have to be in the CIS or Eastern European region to feel those effects, as we know. Of course, with that comes along the inflationary concerns. And whilst it's challenging for global economies to deal with the inflationary impacts, but again, for countries that are primarily energy importers, right, whether it's gas, oil, it becomes more of a challenge. And again, when you're dealing with certain countries that have a lower capita per income and that are energy importers, it becomes even more challenging. Then, of course, you have the problems around the countries that are surrounding sort of the conflict. And the question, of course, remains, will this conflict evolve into something more significant? Would other countries in the near proximity be dragged into this conflict? And as a result, the valuations of some of these credits, and including investment-grade countries, is especially depressed due to that uncertainty.
Well, thank you for that overview, Woody. Eric, we've discussed EMD extensively on the call so far. Broadening out to other asset classes, what's the asset allocation team's current view on EMFX and EM equities?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it may surprise you, but we are reasonably constructive, actually, on EM Forex. The reason is that they are generally cheap versus fundamentals. So if you look at things like inflation differentials, terms of trade, and so on, they are relatively cheap. Also, EM central banks have been really ahead of the curve in terms of this hiking cycle. The real rate differential between EM and the Fed is very high, and we expect that to remain high because we think that, as I said earlier, we think they need to do more, but we are relatively confident that they will do that because they have done it so far. They have a good track record in this cycle. Particularly if you use another funding currency and not the US dollar, because to a large extent, what we're seeing is the story of a strong dollar. It's not that other currencies are particularly weak against each other. On equities, we usually look at the Chinese cycle. And Woody said that we expect a stronger half. That is to some extent true. Obviously, the second quarter in particular was disastrous for China. So we do see some improvement there. But we are in generally relatively bearish on the growth outlook. So it will remain way below the 5% potential growth of China just because of this combination of zero COVID strategy and a very contagious variant of the virus. So we are not that bullish there. And if you step back and take a broader view of EM equities, a lot of people tell you that because EM equity has underperformed over the last 5 years, it's very cheap. We don't really agree with that view. We think it's just reflective of the growth premium of EM that has come down really significantly also over the last 5 years. And that really is a return to normality. It was the noughties, really, where you had these huge growth premiums in EM. Those were the outliers. And we are now returning to a more normal world. And so we think that EM equities from that angle are rightly priced, but not terribly cheap.
Right. Very interesting. I would direct our listeners to a blog post on that exact theme about EM equities and growth that's on the Elgin blog. I know you wrote recently, Eric. Sonia, we've covered a lot of ground today, as always. What are the key takeaways for investors? And is there anything you'd like to add?
Thanks, Max. I think it's very clear that there's an agreement that the growth outlook will be the dominant driver of markets going forward. But I don't think it's as clear cut a handover from inflation to growth than some might anticipate. So I think we have to be mindful that inflation might still be a topic that we should watch in the second half. And that means that you have now a twin problem to digest within markets. And although I very clearly think that looking at what companies are going to tell us will give us some insight into where we're heading with regards to the cycle, it is exactly this potential resilience to the hiking cycle that might surprise us and that will eventually require the Fed to go further than currently anticipated. And hence, volatility is here to stay, even the recent calm. Hopefully, we have a calmer summer, but it's very clear that with more data points coming through, I'm sure this debate has not yet gone away. Valuation levels, as discussed, are definitely approaching more attractive levels. But again, it very much depends on the earnings outlook and how, you know, how much we have to reduce the expectations going forward, i.e. how much growth will be slowing down. And I think as discussed, there will be tremendous differences. For Europe, it's very clear the longer the situation in Ukraine continues, the worse potentially the outlook is. There's a very clear correlation because the uncertainty around the energy imports and gas supplies in particular are a huge swing factor on sentiment, on direct the consumer impact, and as such can obviously change the narrative quite quickly. Now, that is something we cannot forecast and we don't even try to predict. We just try to prepare in trying to understand the potential implications. But that means that Europe will be in a weaker position for quite some time compared to other parts of the world. The Fed and the US, we've discussed at length here. I actually think the surprise might be that inflation is stickier and more persistent, and hence the expectation on tightening having to be adjusted. And I think in that context, in having discussed Asia and emerging markets at length today, it's very clear that the situation in China, we haven't even talked about COVID today, but clearly there's a lot of noise to, right now in how China is dealing with it, with the current infection wave, and what the implication is on growth going forward, because that would be a key driver for the region and how we think about the relative attractiveness.
Thanks for that, Sonia. And finally, I'd just like to ask everyone on the call, as we do every month, what you've been watching, reading, or listening to in recent weeks. I'll get the ball rolling and say I've been reading a set of novels by Anthony Trollope, the 19th century English novelist, all about UK politics that really resonates with the current situation in Westminster. I strongly recommend them. Sonia.
That is very, very timely, Max. Slightly more lighthearted from me. We tried as a family to go and watch Top Gun in the cinemas, but I had to stay home because of COVID. Very timely again. So I watched the old Top Gun again, which is actually quite enjoyable still.
A real classic. Thank you. Woody.
Well, I'm probably more boring, but I've been focusing a lot more sort of on the geopolitics. And so a lot of YouTube and just papers on, you know, the Russia, Ukraine, what's going on in the Middle East, which is quite interesting. I mean, geopolitics are basically ruling the roost right now. So I'm finding that sort of area very interesting.
We are living in a fascinating moment. Thank you, Eric.
Yeah, I'm reading Life and Fate by Vasily Grossman. It's like a Russian epic spanning the Battle of Stalingrad and the early Stalin years. So again, a lot of resonance to the current backdrop. Yeah,
another classic. I've started it, never finished it. So well done.
It's a big one. Yeah,
it is a big book. Look. Thank you all, Sonia, Woody, and Eric, for your time today. And thank you to our clients and listeners for joining us. Our next edition of the CIO Call will be in August, when we'll be joined by Colin Reedy and Lars Krekel to talk about active strategies and review Q2 earnings. In the meantime, you can find our latest updates via our social media channels on the Elgin blog and, of course, here on Elgin Talks.
Enjoyed listening to this podcast, you can leave us a rating or maybe even a review if you're feeling particularly generous on the Apple Podcast app. It really helps new listeners to find us, and we're always on the lookout for new ways we can improve. As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals only and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. This podcast should not be taken as an invitation to deal in legal and general investments. Any views expressed during this recording belong to the individuals and are based on market conditions at the time of the recording and do not reflect the views of Legal & General Investment Management. Forward-looking statements are, by their nature, subject to significant risks and uncertainties and are based on internal forecasts and assumptions and should not be relied upon. Where individual stocks are mentioned, these do not constitute a recommendation to buy or sell any security and are for illustrative purposes only. Legal & General Investment Management is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. To find more great content, check us out on Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website, elgym.com. Copyright 2021, Legal & General Investment Management Limited. All rights reserved. No part of this publication may be reproduced or transmitted in any form or by any means, including photocopying and recording, without the written permission of the publishers. This material is issued by Legal & General Investment Management Asia Limited, a licensed corporation, BBB 488, regulated by the Hong Kong Securities and Futures Commission. For professional investors only.